from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. All over the world and all over the Great Lakes State, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find us on our website. Also pick up our podcast there absolutely free. And we are being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Mike Green and his great crew, loaded down with ammunition. If you need ammo, make sure you check out Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason, or notjustguns.com. They've got Wednesday night auctions for all kinds of firearms and ammunition. They got everyday carry stuff, whatever it is you're looking for. The small store in Mason has got a big, big inventory and some great people to take care of you as well. Conquest Deer Sense out of Davison, Michigan. Doug Roberts and the crew doing a bang-up job as always. And the United Deer Farmers of Michigan bringing you Wild Michigan this week again. And our good friend Richard P. Smith. Lockdown not bothering you as much because you are outdoors up in the Marquette area so much that the parts per quadrillion are pretty safe in the fresh air. How are
exactly.
you, sir?
I'm great, Duran. How are you?
Good. Good to have you here. It was kind of funny. I was thinking to myself, oh, it's spring, you know, and all of a sudden, wait a minute. I'm starting to, my wife and I were talking about black bears, and I said, you know what? It is that time. That we should, you know, the sightings will be probably more frequent if people are getting out in those areas because the hibernation is over, the cubs are coming out, and it's getting to be warmer out, despite the fact that you got snow this morning that we called you.
Yeah, and just a little skiff of snow, it's not going to last too long.
No, like I told you off air, I said 8 inches of snow right now at this point of the year wouldn't bother me a bit because it'll be gone like a day or two.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk a little bit about bears coming out of hibernation. We really didn't have that tough of a winter down here anyway. I'm not sure. How was it for you guys up in the Marquette area?
It was one of the mildest winters I've ever experienced in the UP, Duran. It was like a non-winter. We did not get enough snow to cause deer to go to winter yards like they normally do. Deer were dispersed throughout their summer range because they were able to move wherever they wanted during the winter. We did get snow, we got some cold, but we didn't get enough snow to restrict movements of whitetails. So we should have had excellent survival of deer, although bears were probably still denned as much as normal, although we did have an early spring. They may have left their dens in March rather than normally they leave them in April.
You know, I was going to ask you how that warmer weather affects them because a lot of animals are like photosensitive and they deal with the daylight accordingly, you know, kind of like we do with clocks, but their daylight time affects them differently. But bears in hibernation are not exposed to that light, but it's more of an air temperature that does it then.
Well, once the snow is gone and the temperatures warm up enough, I think they realize what's happening and at least peek out and see there's no snow left and then start moving around.
Now, I know when we were up in the UP, up in the Sioux area, the beginning of March, there was a lot of snow up there piled up from some last minute, some late snows that have hit. But that really, by this time, hasn't affected the animals much.
No.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was... It was more snow than we'd ever seen at that time of year going up there. And it was just one of those last-minute trips that we decided to go, and we absolutely loved the UP. But now let's talk a little bit about bears and cubs because, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not too versed in bears, but do they have them during the hibernation time?
Yes. They're unique in that way, Duran, that they have their young when they're in their winter dens. Most young are born during the spring and summer, but black bears, the cubs are born when their mother's in the den, usually during January, but sometimes in February, and they're several months old by the time they leave the den.
Wow. And I find that strange because that's really leaving those very small infant bears, I mean, to fend for themselves, to find, you know, the food source that is their mother, and blindly.
But they manage just fine. Lynn Rogers in Minnesota has put cameras inside of black bear dens, and a lot of we used to think that females were asleep when they gave birth to their cubs and didn't know it and woke up and where'd they come from? But the cameras in the dens have shown that females are awake during the birth of their cubs, and they assist them in allowing them to nurse. So they know what's going on.
Oh, good, because it sees that whole thing, you know, I'm glad we have had the ability to put cameras in there because it was us kind of going blindly going, wondering what was happening that whole time.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I've always been fascinated with black bears in Michigan. I mean, I've had the opportunity to hunt them. Of course, you've written several books on black bears, whitetail. You've walked with such, photographed. You've done videography work. And getting up close and personal with Michigan black bears, to me, is something that's pretty impressive, and that's something you've done.
Yeah, I've done a lot of it. I've always been fascinated by black bears, and I was aware there was a lot of false information being circulated about the animals, so I spent as much time as I could learning as much as I could about the animals and photographing them. Throughout the year, even in their dens, I spent a lot of time going with researchers and DNR personnel when they checked radio collars and dens and gathered as much information as I could. And I'm still fascinated by the animals. They're very unique, one of Michigan's megafauna.
And you're still here to talk about it, too, which is great because, I mean, look, I've had, in my opinion, as close of an encounter with a bear, probably closer than most of my friends have, when I was hunting Canada, I was probably about 10 yards from a black bear on a bait pile. And after that, look, it's a whole mess after the fact because the sight was loose on my bow. I'll just say that much. But to have stalked up on a about a 300-pound black bear at that time, to me, was one of the coolest things ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be that close and you know, not have been charged or mock charged or anything like that, I mean, to still be able to talk about it. And that's my fascination has always been black bears, and I live vicariously through you.
I've actually had physical contact with bears in the wild, not necessarily by choice, but it worked out. And I've never been injured by a black bear, even though I've had contact with them. Let me explain a couple instances. I photographed bears quite a bit in areas where they're being fed. One of my first instances, though, was in the UP. We used to have open pit dumps in the UP mm-hmm. where I'd go and photograph bears. One point, I had a young bear, walk right up to me and had his mouth open on the toe of my boot like he was going to bite down. And I said, no, don't do that. And he paid attention and backed up. In another place where bears were being fed, I was backing up away from one bear, and there was another bear that I didn't know sitting down behind me. I backed into that bear that was sitting down, actually made contact with it, and felt it stand up against the back of my leg, and then it turned and walked away.
Wow. I mean, mind you, I'm picturing all this in my head right now, and I'm kind of laughing, trying to hold it from everybody hearing me laugh. But that's an amazing, just amazing story to have had happen to you. Definitely close encounter of the bear kind, which we will talk more with Richard P. Smith in just a couple minutes. Find him online, richardpsmith.com, a wonderful author, photographer, and videographer. We're going to find out more about black bears in springtime in Michigan. Here on the Michigan Talk Network.
I still believe. Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild!
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Coming up in the second portion of this hour, we're going to speak with Corey Meyer from Steelhead Outdoors. Find out what product he has come up with, and he and his partner have come up with, and find out how that innovation can benefit you. But first, we're speaking with Richard P. Smith, noted outdoor author here in Michigan, videographer and photographer, award-winning in all categories. And Richard, we're talking about black bear in Michigan, the spring black bear, getting out and doing what bear do in the springtime, which, I mean, they're probably, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a lot of foraging and things like that, putting back on the body weight that was lost over the course of the wintertime.
Yeah, they don't gain too much weight in the spring. Some of the first foods they eat are green grass and vegetation, newly sprouted leaves, so they don't gain a lot of weight from that, but it gets their digestive system working. But if they find roadkill deer, they might put weight on with that type of food or other type of carrion. But they search out whatever food they can find. They often end up at people's bird feeders because that's a nutritious, high-calorie food for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that causes problems.
Yeah, it tends to make people not happy when they have bird feeders that are torn down by bears. Now, recently, my wife and I were talking early this morning about a black bear that was hit on I-75 in Flint. And you know, we've seen the Grand Rapids area with bears, and, you know, that's coming a little far south for some people.
Yeah, it is. But that reflects the fact that bears are increasing in the southern part of the state and expanding their range. These bears that are hit on the highway, like the one near Flint, is probably a young male searching out new territory, and when they end up that far south, there's so many highways, so much traffic, that bears often end up as roadkill.
Yeah, I mean, up north, I mean, there's a lot more open space. And when you get down to these more urban areas, I mean, and they're not really familiar with cars and things of that nature. They spend a lot of time nocturnally. Are they as nocturnal in the spring? Is it a year-round consistency for them?
Generally, they are, because there isn't as much cover for them until leaves sprout on trees. In the spring, there isn't that type of protective cover, so they're more active after dark, where they're less likely to be seen.
And of course, that lends itself to why they get hit. In crowded areas like that, is just they're, you know, roaming their range, and that's interesting too, because, you know, I know the Western UP is, if you want to buy a bear license come fall, that is something that is readily available. And you come farther south into the Red Oak area, is very popular, but very difficult to get a license. But here in Michigan, we don't have spring bear hunting. Canada, different story.
Exactly. I've done a lot of spring hunting in Canada, and that's actually when I prefer to hunt, where it's legal, because it coincides with the black bear breeding season. Black bears breed during late spring, early summer, and because of that, adult males are very active during the spring season, looking for females. And I've killed my biggest bears during spring hunts in Saskatchewan, in Manitoba. In fact, my biggest bear I killed during late May in Saskatchewan. It's the number two black bear for North America taken in with a muzzleloader, in muzzleloading records.
That's fantastic. I remember when you took that bear. That was quite a big deal. It's still quite a big deal, in my opinion, to have that, on your credentials, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the difference? Richard P. Smith is our guest here. You can find him online, richardpsmith.com. Richard, the difference in coat, I mean, because some people like the spring coat, some people like the fall coat for hunting bear.
Well, in the spring, they still have their winter coat, and the hairs are 6 to 8 inches long. That's the best coat that a black bear will have in the spring until they start rubbing. In the fall, hairs are much shorter. They're growing their new coat in September and in October. The later in the season you get a bear, the longer the hair will be on the coat.
Yeah, because I've heard my friend Tom Nelson says, you know, I really like the spring bear hunting because the coat's much thicker, and you know, before they get into that rubbing, you want to get it before then. Mm-hmm. You know, for those of us who only hunt, you know, the fall season here in Michigan, I don't think a lot of people know that. Now, when we are out, I mean, here we go. We're in spring turkey season. We are going to be doing mushroom hunting, which some morels are popping up as we speak, which is odd and early, but still, this is the spring we've had. There's a good opportunity to maybe encounter a black bear, preferably without a cub, or cubs, plural. But there are ways that we can protect ourselves without getting physical.
Well, it just make lots of noise when you're out there. I mean, you don't have to go out of your way to scream and holler and shout, but talk in normal tones. Don't walk quietly and avoid stepping on sticks. Step on sticks, make noise in the leaves. And bears don't want to encounter people, for the most part, any more than you want to encounter them. So if they detect you, and they have excellent hearing, excellent smelling, they often will hear or see or smell you before you have a clue any bears in the area, and they'll leave on their own. But if you do see one, just make lots of noise, wave your arms, hit a stick on a tree, and generally they'll take off.
Now, aside from the noise and stuff, I've heard to make yourself look as big as possible, maybe unzip your jacket if you're wearing one, if you have that kind of time. You have a very good chance of standing, staying safe with an encounter with a black bear, much more than a brown or a grizzly.
Definitely.
Now, because I think the browns and the grizzlies, you just wind yourself up in a ball and pray for the best.
They're just more aggressive animals, grizzlies and brown bears.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing when you see that. I mean, look, I know the size difference and I know the capabilities are very different, but black bears to me are always been so fascinating here in this state. I've yet to take one. That's good, like my all-time goal is to hunt black bear in Michigan here. And I know people do it with dogs, and I know people do it with shotguns, rifles. I prefer the bow, hopefully someday.
Mm-hmm. Our application period for applying for bear licenses starts on May 1st and goes until June 1st. And we have a preference point system. The longer you apply unsuccessfully, the better your chances of eventually getting a license.
Yeah, and that's what I've done over the years. I'm probably pretty close to maxed out on preference points right now, so now I really have to start thinking about where I want to go mm-hmm. and in that order, and then from there maybe find a guide and not do it like I did with my elk season. I was successful, but still the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life.
Right.
Richard P. Smith, thank you so much for joining us. Find him online, richardpsmith.com, award-winning Michigan author. Videographer and photographer.
Always nice talking to you, Duran.
Thanks, Richard. Our best to Lucy as well.
All right. Same to you.
It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, this is Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, buck knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world via our website and podcast, wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, United Deer Farmers of Michigan, for staying on with us and bringing you another week of Wild Michigan as we are fully into turkey season here in the Great Lakes State. And that got underway last weekend, Saturday. And as I was up in my in-law's place up near Mount Pleasant, they live right across from some state land that is very, very full of wild turkey. We see them back and forth through the yard all the time. And it's, you know, it would be a great place for me to go hunt across the street, but it almost seems a little easy. Okay, it's not real easy, but it seems easier than most, especially for the guys who got there about 9:30, parked the car, went in, shot a turkey, came out in about 15, 20 minutes, and then come back in a different car with one extra guy and decided 15, 20 minutes in, they're taking another turkey. But this one, they decided to hide under their coat. Now, mind you, I don't know exactly what was going on, but if you ever see anything suspicious like that and you think there might be some ill-gotten deeds going on, then I suggest you record or report any poaching that you see. It's become rampant in this state, unfortunately. And, you know, the self-entitled attitudes of a lot as of late have really, really starting to ruin it for those of us who work very hard and take hunting and fishing in this state very seriously. So I would just say, if you see something, say something, and it does everybody good that we make sure we take care of our natural resources here in the state as best as we can. And you also want to protect what you have within your own home, especially when it comes to firearms. Firearms, of course, expensive, no matter which gun it is that you, you choose to have. Ammunition at a premium right now for price. So why not protect them? Why not, protect them with a good investment of a better than average, safe? You know, you have your typical big box brands that you can go in, carry out yourself, but is it really protecting what you own and what you care about so much? I mean, they're a great place to keep locked up if you've got kids, but really going that extra step for your investments, because sometimes one shotgun over and under can cost you as much as a safe can cost you. And if you lose that, well, you're probably out some good cash. So right now I've got Corey Meyer from Steelhead Outdoors joining me. Modular safes. And this is really cool. Corey, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Rand. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I got your press release, and I was looking. I'm like, you know what? I don't think maybe once in 15 years we've covered safes, and I saw this one, the opportunity, because there's a couple of things about it that I really wanted to talk to you about, because one, it's American made first and foremost. That's what we like. Small business. You guys are relatively new, and this is modular. So this is something that really kind of took me by surprise this morning as I was looking through things. So tell us a little bit about Steelhead and when you guys started, because when I talked to you yesterday, this is pretty new to you.
Right. So we started developing this thing in 2016. So my business partner and I come from an extensive background in metal fab and product development. He's been welding since he was about 10, and me since high school. And then we were sort of in the market for a safe at the same time, and we were doing our research and looking at the normal places, and we found there was a ton of really high-quality safes out there, but they were difficult to move because they're one piece. There's a few companies making these things called modular safes, and I thought, what's that? We did a bunch of research, and like I said, there's a couple options out there, but there wasn't one that was American-made and offered fire insulation. So, you know, the tinkerers and inventors in us thought, why don't we see if we can do this, make a new solution to this? So we set out in 2016. It took us a while. You know, we threw quite a few safes away, and we burned some in the oven, and we sent some out to people that in the industry and got some feedback and reiterated again. And then we launched just over a year ago. We launched at our first trade show, and we've been selling them, on our website and through our phone for about a year.
And it really, in the grand scheme of things, you guys are a new small business here in America trying to make it in an industry, although rather niche, it's still pretty handled by just a few people.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Now, I mean, look, necessity is always the mother of invention. When you finally got something you wanted, what was your next step? I mean, you have to think to yourself, okay, how are we going to market this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a big investment, a gun safe. So what we found is, you know, we put pictures on our website. We had people call and talk to us. But a lot of people were still, you know, a little bit apprehensive to send their money to a stranger for a company that exists online. So our first big step was to hit a trade show. And that was kind of our plan for all of 2020, was to hit as many consumer events as we could. And we got in one trade show, the Pheasants Forever National Banquet, the Pheasant Fest. We did that in February, and then our second trade show in March only got one day, and work got canceled from the, you know, the year that was COVID.
Sure.
So we had to pivot kind of aggressively during last year and really ramp up our presence with our YouTube channel and our marketing efforts online and social media to try to really illustrate to people the benefits and the high quality build of our safes without them being able to touch them, because that was our goal. You know, at the trade show, people would put their hands on them and see the quality and the features firsthand and be relatively, you know, super impressed with the product and be excited about it. But it's a little harder to portray that on a computer screen than it is in person.
Corey Meyer from Steelhead Outdoors is joining me here. We're talking about the modular safes that they manufacture. And what a time to prove yourself in the outdoors industry, which so many people think is this great, big, huge industry. It's not. It's not. This is an everybody knows everybody thing. In some cases, a good old boy network. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, but I mean that because we are so very close and very tight knit that sometimes it's hard for the new guy to break in. And a lot of times you're seen as a gimmick, but you guys are doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a good year. We've been growing every month a little bit, and we're in it for the long haul. So we're ready to do what it takes to be here in 30 years from now.
Now, when we say modular safes, these things are not coming to you whole, crated upright, and you got to figure out either, one, who are you going to pay to do this, or how many cases of beer is this going to cost me for my buddies to move it in the house?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was like the spawn, that was the idea was, while we were looking for safes, a couple of buddies that I was working with were like, hey, I'm selling my house, and I'm just really hoping the people that buy it want the safe, because I'm just going to leave it. I'm not moving it. It's too heavy, too difficult. But if I have to move it, will you come help me? And I'm like, oh, boy. So I don't know if you've ever moved a safe, but it's not fun. So that was sort of the spark for our idea. And we started researching, and we thought, look, there's some lighter-duty cabinets, and there's some other options out there, but we want to make one that two people can move and that still offers, you know, a decent amount of theft and fire protection when you get it put in place.
Now, when we spoke yesterday, real quickly before the interview, just to kind of break the ice between us both, you were telling me about the fireproofing in some safes being just like a commercial grade drywall, which blew my mind. I'm like, really? I thought there was some sort of odd insulation or something like that. But you guys went a completely different route.
Right. So, yeah, you're correct in saying that for decades, the gun safe industry has used what they call fireboard, which is essentially the same as residential drywall. Performs well in fire testing, but it has just a couple of drawbacks that are kind of difficult every day. The first one being moisture. So, like, dehumidifiers are really prevalent in gun safes. And if you do have your safe in a humid area, a dehumidifier is still a good idea. But the primary reason why it's so widespread, even if someone has it in an air-conditioned living room, is that the drywall gives off a little bit of moisture all the time.
Okay,
that moisture will kind of damage your contents if you don't have a dehumidifier.
All right, hold the line. We're gonna reset that when we come back, because we don't want anybody to miss any of this. Sorry, I caught you at a tough time. You're listening to Wild Michigan. We're being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by United Deer Farmers of Michigan, UDFOM.com. Find out what those guys have going on. A great group of people working together, not only to produce big deer that you see at some of the private facilities, but to help find out the truth behind CWD in the Great Lakes State. They are putting their own money in to figure out what's going on and how to stop the spread of CWD in the wild deer herd in Michigan, because it affects everybody, okay? It's not just about them. It's about all of us collectively, and that's what this show is. And you can find it online at wildmichiganradio.com, and you can find our podcast there, and absolutely free. Download those. Listen to them anytime you want. And Corey, from what I understand, you had a pretty long day listening to Wild Michigan over in Minnesota, wondering what you were getting yourself into.
Yeah. I had the first day of lawn mowing going on Sunday, so I figured what better way to get ready than to just listen to six or seven episodes of you, Duran.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, it's either a big lawn or dude's really bored. But
maybe a little of both, but it was a good time either way.
Good. Yeah, you know what? We really enjoy doing this show. We've done it for going on 15 years now, and lots of great guests. And I say this time and time again, that have so much information that any question I ask, they have a great answer for. And when we unfortunately got cut so short in the last segment, we were talking about the fireproofing in your safes versus other safes. The other safes having a drywall substance that still can contain some moisture, but you guys have gone to a different type of material that not only helps prevent the moisture, but fireproofing as well.
Yeah, that's correct. So since we thought that we wanted to get away from that moisture problems that come with traditional safes, so we figured out a new solution. So we have a ceramic blanket material that is commonly used in industrial applications, such as high-end fireplaces or kilns or heat treat ovens. And that blanket material is rated for 2300 degrees, but then we put a secondary step in there where our interior panels are actually metal and instead of plywood or carpet. And then on the backside that faces out of the safe, there's a reflective coating that pushes any radiant heat out, very similar to like the heat shield on your muffler of your car. So we try to take good solutions from other industries and apply them to ours.
Man, that's pretty interesting all the way around. Because you see fire ratings on safes, and you know, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, are they taking these things to a crematorium and throwing them in there for a while? You know, are they putting things in the safe when they test them? Are they empty when they test? Maybe this is a question you can answer for me, because I don't know enough about that. I just see what's on the sticker.
Yep. So what is interesting about gun safes is there isn't like an independent organization that will test these and certify them for you. So you're left to do it on your own as a manufacturer. So you can work with labs that have ovens, and they can perform the tests that you tell them to, which is what we did. But there's not a central organization with a set test. So we went to actually a place that does heat treating, and then they also use their giant heat treat oven for some testing. And we said, look, after doing some research, we would like to test this in your open flame oven at 1200 degrees. We would like as many temperature sensors inside as you can fit. We want the safe to be completely empty, and we would like you to stop the test when one of the temperature sensors reaches 350 degrees. So we did that, and it took over 30 minutes on both two of our largest and smallest safe models for any of the temperature sensors to reach 350 degrees. So, but because of like the inconsistency of the way that all these manufacturers test, we don't have, you know, the fancy sticker on there that says we certify this for, you know, X degrees, X minutes, but we're happy to share our test data with anyone that would like to know.
You know, I find Corey Myers, our guest with Steelhead Outdoors. Corey, I find that so important because, I mean, there are so many factors that are involved when it comes to fire testing, and then a real life scenario, because you know you don't know when where a fire is going to start in a facility, how long it's going to burn before the fire department gets there, how much water it's going to hit, you know, if any. I mean, there's so many variables into, you know, where you put your safe and how the safe is is affected by a house fire or a structure fire. I mean, so many things we don't know, but what we do know is how you tested it, and that's where that, you know, information comes in.
Right, and like you mentioned, you hit on a key point, right? In the house fire, there's going to be hot and cold spots, and the fact that you haul this safe into your house in pieces, you can strategically pick where you put it into a spot that's much more likely to be much cooler in the sake of a fire, inside of a closet, on the exterior wall, in the basement, places where you probably couldn't fit a large one-piece safe in your house.
Yeah, it's and the thing is, too, I mean, if you're putting it, you have a two-story house, you're putting it on a second floor, and maybe the fire starts on the first floor, there might be some sort of weight issue that sends that safe down to the first floor. I don't know. It's just
right. My
mind going where it's going. You know what I mean?
Right.
But and it's really, I mean, when you have that much invested in what you love, I mean, look, man, guns are not cheap no matter what you're buying. And if you have a few of them, you want them protected because sometimes, I mean, even replacement value isn't what an actual value of a firearm is.
Oh, yeah. Sentimental value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of factors involved. Corey Meyer from Steelhead Outdoors is joining us. Website, steelheadoutdoors.com. Corey, again, when I first saw the name of the company, I'm like, okay, is somebody doing something with fishing? But that's not the case at all. I mean, it's a great name. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, we just wanted, we're big fans of fishing, and we just wanted a name that would have a few meanings to it. And we thought, you know, it tells people to head to the outdoors, and all of our parts are made with American steel. And yeah, like you said on a couple episodes ago, the steelhead is kind of the toughest of the trail family. So it's ready to go for a long haul. So are we.
Now let's talk real quickly. I got to cut just a couple of minutes left in the segment about assembly, because look, man, when I get something to assemble, it's usually got two or three Allen wrenches and a diagram.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's that simple or what.
Yeah, actually it is. My wife put me to task putting together some of the furniture you get in the mail, and I would say that these safes are much easier than that. They come with a video that's on our YouTube channel, and quite honestly, the video is a really good way to watch it ahead of time before you even decide to buy, because it gives you a good illustration of the quality build and what you're in for. And you do get two Allen wrenches, and you can put the whole thing together with two Allen wrenches. So I tell people it's two Allen wrenches, two guys or gals in 2 hours. And we can do it in, you know, for trade shows in 30 minutes, but if it's your first time around, you probably want to give yourself an hour or two. So we'll say conservatively, two people, two wrenches, and 2 hours, and you'll have a safe where you want it.
And you know what? And I was kidding about the two Allen wrenches, and that's what I get. That's totally
that's what
I get.
You'll be in the package with your safe.
That is awesome. Man, honestly, now I'm so encouraged, because it is literally only two Allen wrenches, and I probably have those laying around anyway, but they'll end up in that pile that you get with everything else that you have to put together. That's fantastic.
I sure will.
Corey, I want to real quickly comment, too, when folks go to your website, steelheadoutdoors.com, that the logo is fantastic.
Appreciate that.
I mean, it's a woodland scene, but yet it resembles a steelhead for some reason.
Yep, it sure does.
So now you guys are expanding. You've already grown exponentially compared to last year, which is the first year of the 15-week to flatten the curve, or 15 days to flatten the curve.
Right.
Now that we're on like the 150th 15 days to flatten the curve, you guys are still growing.
Yeah, we're just coming up on our sales total from last year, and we've got to get introduced to a ton of really awesome customers. And that's the cool part about being smaller, is I get to talk to all of our customers still, myself and my business partner. We get to customize the safe exactly how they want it. And we've got thank you cards from happy customers. We've got positive customer testimonials. We got Christmas cards from one of our customers. It's just super cool to be able to like make a difference and something that people are passionate about. We know people are passionate about their guns.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's something we are definitely passionate about here. And you know, we love what you guys are doing, man. It's really cool that you have made something that is not only form and function. It's good looking when you go see them at steelheadoutdoors.com. But it's something that it doesn't take a lot of brawn and maneuverability to put together where you want it in the house, because that to me has always been one of those stopping points. It's like, where am I going to put it? And what if I don't like it there? And what if I move? You know, I will be taking it with me anyway, but this is definitely something that's portable, which is fantastic. But Corey, good times, man. We appreciate you joining us here on the show. And it's been a great time having you on. And by all means, look for this on the podcast, wildmichiganradio.com, Corey Meyer, steelheadoutdoors.com. Dude, best of luck to you in 2021 and beyond that, because we're going to want an update from you as well.
Well, thanks for having us, and best of luck to you guys, too.
Absolutely. Stick around. We got a whole another hour coming your way. If you could join us, fantastic. If not, make sure you pick us up on the podcast, wildmichiganradio.com. We're being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Lord knows they got the ammo, along with all the other firearms that you're looking for, and great service, too. Conquest Sense, deer sense in a stick, along with the other fantastic products of Conquest Sense made right here in Michigan. And the United Deer Farmers of Michigan are bringing you Wild Michigan on the outdoors, in the outdoors, on the Wild Michigan Talk Network.